listening Dog Media.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to The Offside Rule. I'm Kate Borsay joining you this week. And alongside me, it's the Premier League's finest reporter. It's Lindsay Hooper. Hi, Lindsay.
Still the finest, am I? This keeps going on. I mean, Hayley and I will take this. Thank you.
And Sky Sports News' bestest ever anchor, Hayley McQueen. Hi, Hayley.
I won't tell Jim White. But if you're listening, Jim, sorry, it's official.
Tell any of them. Don't tell any of them. Well, listen, there's so much football going on at the moment. It's great to have you both with me. I can't remember a day when there wasn't a game, you know, certainly between men's and women's fixtures. They're coming in thick and fast, aren't they? And I guess that the plot lines of the season really are being established, constantly twisting and turning. We don't quite know where it's going to go yet. New characters popping up. Maybe we've seen some blockbuster moments in the past week. Mike Dean's red card has certainly got people talking, hasn't it, Linz?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, first of all, death threats to have emerged from that, absolutely not on. Yeah. And the fact that he now is going into this week saying, I don't feel I can referee a game this weekend, it's shocking, really. And there's been quite a few things that have gone on this week. I mean, only today, Steve Bruce has been talking about getting death threats as well. He's not even on social media, but he's been speaking about how people have been getting to him and those messages to him through his children's accounts. So, you know, that's awful. And we have to make sure that, you know, we highlight the fact that that is wrong. But, you know, there were some ridiculous decisions and incidents, I think, in that match. It resulted in the Socek red card that's been rescinded since. Mitrovic as well, the fact that he ended up being part of that appeal panel to get that card rescinded in the end after his play acting. We'll come on to that again later. but yeah, what an eventful week all round. There was the blockbuster Everton and Spurs. Did both of you see that?
Yeah, well, I've got that coming up later as well, because it's actually really hard when you're referencing some of the big moments, and as we're going to in this podcast reference some of the most dramatic moments, it's actually, this week's dominated so much of my thoughts.
And of course, that was an FA Cup story. But there have been other ones. I know Hayley, doing Sky Sports News, you'll have seen this as well, about the EFL letter now to social media companies about getting some change.
Yeah, and about time. Absolutely. They absolutely have to do something. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I like the idea of you not being able to set up another account, or if you do have a new account, that you can't do it maybe from the same email address or from the same details. So you can't then go and do something. I think it's called nesting. I've had it before when someone's hacked into my emails and they can basically open up an email. If it's hacked into, someone can then set up another email address that then goes to another email address. And I think people are now doing that with Instagram. I know I had a few of us have had a strange guy message us wanting us to be gunged. You may have seen this over the years. It's been going on for about 10 years. Me, Bianca Westwood, Laura Woods, basically any female that works with Sky Sports has a man. It's not.
In all fairness, Kate and I would like to see you gunged.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah,
thanks.
Yeah, but so maybe he's... not for as perverse a reason as this man potentially wants to.
His account keeps being deleted because he's obviously been sending other messages to other people, which are a bit more extreme. Ours are a bit lighthearted, but he keeps opening up an account, and you can tell it's him because he's sending us the same messages, asking the same things. I'm like, mate, we know it's you.
Yeah.
There aren't 20 people on this earth that are asking the same thing.
But you know, also, if you know it's him, then those social media companies should be picking up
of
on
course,
that. They should be picking up on the pattern of his messages. It isn't hard to do. A lot of these social media companies assess us and our information and our data like you wouldn't believe. They have such sophisticated systems there that should be possible. Do you know what? All I've ever been asked for is a picture of my feet, Lindsay. I think you had a stage of someone wanting to see you in tights, didn't you?
I'm not even going down. No, honestly, that's another story for another day. But yes. Well, let's go back to the football. Manchester City guys, 15-game winning streak. Let's bring that back up.
That one. And then if we're going on kind of, you know, drama events, Bournemouth saving Burnley from picking a suspended player, that was a great news line. And of course, Bournemouth winning as well in that game. Manchester United making it to a record 7th successive FA Cup quarter final. Hayley as well. That was a nice line from the week. There's just been so much going on, isn't there?
I picked my games wrong. I watched Manchester United, which was not the most exciting of games, and then chose not to watch or any of the football. Midweek this week, didn't watch Everton Tottenham.
Oh, I did.
I know, all the ones I've watched. I watched Wolves Leicester, Lindsay, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
thanks.
I was having to update that on Sunday. And
it was a bit dire, to be honest.
But... I was also updating West Ham, who were away at Fulham, and then Manchester United against Everton. So at least United Everton got the goals. But you know, in this last week, the games that I've watched have provided me with not a single goal until Manchester United in the FA Cup finally managed to do it in extra time.
Anyway, let's truck on with the show, shall we? Coming up this week, drama. This time when football gets theatrical, that will be discussed. So good you could have made a film about it. That's also coming up today. Or so good you could have made a film about them might be more fitting. But first, let's feel the love. Yeah, that's right. It's Valentine's Day on Sunday, and that's what's prompted topic one. So we wanted to take a look at our favourite couples, not showbiz couples, by the way, but footballing couples, as in footballing pairs. Pairs of footballers who work in perfect symmetry together on the pitch. Hayley, should we start with yours?
Okay, I've probably gone and stated the absolute obvious. So I've got a couple that I want to mention here, but what about... And I hate to say it because it's the blue half of Manchester, Ruben Dias and John Stones. And I think Stones is going to be selected by Gareth Southgate in his next squad. He'll probably be playing at the Euros as well because of his partnership at the heart of defence with Ruben Dias. They are so solid. They're the bedrock for Pep Guardiola. I think that's the reason why they've basically regained a bit of that kind of attacking force going forward. Since losing 5-2 to Leicester in September, and I've made sure I've counted the times that they've started, counted the games, this is not something I found off Optostat. Yes, City have let in just 7 goals in their last 18 league games when these two have been at the back. So since they lost 5-2 to Leicester, which everyone was shocked by, these two have only conceded 7 goals. I mean, that's quite remarkable, isn't it, really? So I think these two as a partnership that has grown and got stronger and stronger and have basically put City where they're at right now at the top of the league.
I had got this too as my defensive partnership, Hayley. So great minds. I did a little bit of a calculation as well. And since Dias joined from Benfica, they've gone on to keep 18 clean sheets, Manchester City, since he arrived. He's also being touted, isn't he, as a future captain for Manchester City. And he's making John Stones so much better for it as well. So, yeah, absolutely. Those are in my list.
I've got a centre-back partnership as well, actually, and I'm probably going, you know, a little bit further back with this one, and one of the pair has got a hamstring problem at the moment, so we haven't seen him. But I'm going to go Leicester, and I'm going to go Johnny Evans for my first one, just for his consistency. I think he's probably had the most starts for Leicester, isn't he? But just the fact that he's so composed, he's so experienced, he doesn't waste challenges either. He's pretty savvy. He'll just usually make the ones that he knows he's going to win. I think his anticipation of play is amazing. He'll often just get between the player and the ball and just get in the way until either he's fouled or Schmeichel gets the ball or he's got a chance to clear the ball up the pitch or pass it. So, you know, patience and experience. So key for Johnny Evans. The man I'm matching him up with, Wesley Fofana. He does have a hamstring injury at the moment, as I've said. But I just think that they make a great combo. And that's because while Johnny Evans is, you know, patient, solid, experienced, you've got Fofana, energetic, disruptive. He's very pressing, isn't he? He's only 20. Lots of on-the-ground duels. I think he provides plenty of clearances and interceptions. And it's just that really nice pair, Evans composed and Fofana, you know, strong, pressing, disruptive. So I really love them as a combination. And I don't think anyone thought Fofana would do as well as he has done coming in to replace Harry Maguire already. So he's certainly been a bit of a surprise for me. But yeah, I think they have a really nice pairing.
I'll chip in with my midfield pair then, and this is an Everton duo. I've gone for Abdoulaye Doucouré and Alan because I think they've been brilliant together. They were two new signings. You know, Ancelotti was like, I'm rebuilding the midfield in this team, and I think they've really worked well together. It's a robust midfield now, isn't it? Great engine room to it because both of them can really run up and down the pitch endlessly, it feels. And they're making other players look better because if you watched the FA Cup game, it was actually Tom Davis alongside Doucouré, and Davis had a brilliant game. Many people might be thinking, why wasn't I talking about him? But I actually think when Alan and Doucouré are together, they're the duo. But what it has done is mean that people like Tom Davis, when they've come in, they've really had to up their game. And he did so in that FA Cup match. He was brilliant. So I've gone with them as my centre pair.
How can we not mention when we're doing a topic like this? But again, I think we have talked about them so often. Kane and Son. And the loving between these two as well. So Son was interviewed after Tottenham's 2-0 win over West Brom, when they'd obviously missed Harry Kane. Now, he was only out for two games when Son basically came out and said, I've really missed him. I've really, really missed him. I can't wait for him to come back. And it wasn't like he'd been missing for, you know, 15 games in a row or seven matches. It was just two, and he was desperate for him to come back already, saying he felt a little bit lost without him.
Yeah. Well, this is the ultimate partnership, isn't it? I mean, Hayley, you and I think we've pretty much gone for the same answers for this one. But I've only just voiced Match Pack, which goes out on BT and Sky and things this week. And each of Kane and Son have contributed 36% of Spurs' goals. But I really wanted to focus on what they've done together because they've provided for one another for a 13th goal this season, which equaled the record for the most direct goal combinations that Shearer and Sutton set back in 1995. I think they will break that record this season. There'll be another combo coming up, maybe even this weekend, who knows? But yeah, what a combination they're proving to be.
Yeah. I'm going to go back to Everton, if that's okay, and just chip in with a strike partnership, and that's predictably Dominic Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison. And obviously this is tried and tested, isn't it, to a certain extent? And I think we saw, you know, again in the FA Cup win against Spurs, the evidence is there. Quickfire double through the pair to get Everton back into it. Richarlison tripped to earn the Toffees a penalty then he scored another. And okay, Calvert-Lewin's got injury issues, hasn't he, as a result of that, I think. But when we look at kind of fire strike partnerships, I think they make a really good one. And what's so important too, and I think we need to mention this as well, they both say that they get on so well off the pitch too. And that's really important chemistry. You need to be able to trust the person that you're playing up against. And while we've been singing the praises of Everton's midfield being very important, of course, you need the men at the front to be able to deliver the goods as well. So yeah, predictable, but needs to be mentioned. Dominic Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison.
This is a growing love affair, okay? And it involves a man who loves himself. What about Zlatan Ibrahimovic and
a mirror?
The partnership he's about to form. Okay, he scored 16 goals this season. He is phenomenal. But they signed Mario Mandzukic, so they're hopefully going to form a bit of a partnership. They both said how excited they are to play with each other. The two old codgers as well, still at it. He's come off the bench twice, Mandzukic. He is their new number nine. He actually replaced Ibrahimovic, but really wants to play alongside him and make sure that AC Milan try and win that title again. So I think that one, it's two oldies cutting it and very complimentary of each other. I don't think Ibrahimovic has spoken as highly of anyone since, well, just speaking about himself, really. It's normally me, I. But yes, there you go. So this is one to watch, a growing partnership of love.
Well, I wonder if they'll all be sending Valentine's cards to each other. I think one thing's for sure, Ibrahimovic will definitely be sending himself one. Let's move on then to a bit of homeschooling.
Instead of taking up that gym membership that you wouldn't use even if the gyms were open, how's about subscribing to The Athletic for just £4 a month as a New Year's resolution? You'll get unrivaled football coverage with analysis and in-depth features from the very best writers around, exclusive Q&As with Athletic staff, and ad-free versions of all of The Athletic's podcasts, including this one. Find out more and sign up today at theathletic.com/offside.
Well, a lot of you listeners will be stuck at home teaching kids or hearing from family who are having to teach kids. Everyone's going slightly nuts at the moment. Half term next week, but that doesn't mean we can't fit in a quick spin of the subject wheel. Bravo, bravo. I think we can all guess what it is. It's performance related. It's drama. Of course it is. That's our specialist subject choice this week. So to carry this out, we want to look at some of the best amateur dramatics of the season so far. Best or worst, I suppose, we can give awards to. Dives, play acting, who deserves the Academy Award for The Phantom Trip or a Golden Globe for He Touched My Face. Who's going to go first?
We should start with Mitrovic, I think, because it got Socek that red card and it was just a dramatic grab of the face, wasn't it? And I feel like VAR as well was part of this dramatics. It let him down 13 times. Mike Dean watched that back, 13, but a very specific clip. And I think this is also part of the problem, but that's a whole other story. But I think Mitrovic has to go in it for that reason. The only thing in his defence is that he did then come forward and as part of the appeal process where it was rescinded, that red card, he actually stuck up for Socek and said, yeah, you know what, I did put some dramatics there to help you get sent off. So he does get a little bit of a reprieve for that, but not much of one.
His father, by the way, Mitrovic's father, once said, I don't know when he said that, but he once said that his son would have been a criminal or a kickboxer had he not been a footballer. I learned that this week and I thought, that's a pretty strong thing to say about your son. But it's, yes, perhaps a little bit of admittance there that his son is quite dramatic.
I think Elon Musk's mum said similar, didn't she? She went, he was either going to end up in a basement somewhere or an absolute genius running the world.
Yeah. I think it's still debatable which one's going to turn out to be true in the end. Okay, Hayley, who have you got?
Okay, I've gone for Ayeti. He was cited after winning a penalty against Kilmarnock, but when it came to the Scottish FA's judicial panel trying to decide whether he did dive or not, I mean, to me, it was, and it was blatant. They said it was not proven. They couldn't prove it. But I don't know if you guys saw him going down. To me, it did very much look like a dramatic dive. But he avoided a two-game ban. They basically couldn't prove it, which is a bit weird. But anyway, there you go.
When we talk diving, there are some regular contenders. And I will very honestly put my hand up and say that Mo Salah is one of those contenders, isn't he, for all-time divers? We could aim that at Jamie Vardy, maybe, but we all quite like Jamie Vardy. He loves winning pens. Are some of those pens awarded for dives? Some of them not. Who knows? But anyway, Mo Salah, I think I have to throw my hat in to the ring for this one. There was lots of controversy just thinking back to last, I think it was late October, And there was the challenge from Masuaku for West Ham. And there were loads of, obviously, clips and memes going around about him winning awards for his rolling around. And he does do that classic, you know, clutching the calf, rolling around a bit like a tortoise on his back. Lots of that going on. And we saw it against City as well, didn't we? Latched onto a Ruben Dias era and went down under the defender's challenge. Threw himself around a little bit as well. And then against Zinchenko as well, I think, in the same game, marking him closely, got a bit of a nudge from the City player and then threw himself down again. So look, I will be completely honest and say, if there was ever a man to capitalise on a little nudge or a soft touch to sort of turn it into a bigger event, then yes, you do have to look at Mo Salah.
Yeah, there are those players, aren't there, that you really admire, that just have you in two minds how you think about them sometimes. Sometimes you just admire their genius, like when you talk about Mo Salah, Kate, and that touch that he had to create the goal against West Ham recently. Wow, I was just absolutely purring at it. But then he has got that in his locker where he looks for those dives and looks for penalties. I think Wilfried Zaha, you can throw him into that as well. And I really admire the way that he plays, and he is targeted quite a bit, but I think he makes the most of that too. But the one that I'm going to go for recent play acting that I thought was really awful and probably would get one of those, do they call it a tomato?
A raspberry.
Instead of a raspberry.
A rotten tomato?
Rotten tomato, yeah. I think it would go to Martial when he got Bednarak sent off in the 9-0 defeat against Southampton.
Mike Dean again, wasn't it?
Mike Dean was involved again. He was the referee, wasn't he? Again, use VAR. But yeah, Martial, he played a huge part in that. And afterwards, he did say, he admitted, it wasn't a foul. So if you can say that after the event, in the throes of it, I know it's part of the modern game, but if we're going to get rid of this, it has to start with, well, it starts with the referee, I suppose, and VAR highlighting it. It's very difficult to show intent. But I think you need a little bit of gentlemanly behaviour too.
Well, this was the post-match interview conducted by Alan McGregor with Sky Sports, and it was after Rangers drew with Hamilton. Rangers have obviously had brilliant season, cruising high, top of the Scottish Premiership, expected to win against Hamilton. McGregor actually produced a number of outstanding saves. Brian Eason scored an own goal in the 80th minute. It looked like Rangers were on course for a 25th league win of the season, but they were finally beaten in the last kick of the game, unfortunately. McGregor was obviously absolutely fuming and was just asked after the game, you know, when you sort of ask, you know, player, whatever, so how would you sum that up? And he just went, was rubbish. It was absolutely rubbish in his Scottish accent. And he went, yep, I thought that. For most of the game, we were very, very poor. The worst I've seen us. Now, they only drew. They only dropped points. He put in a wonderful performance. They didn't actually play that bad. He went, and when obviously the reporter was trying to get a little bit more out of him, to, you know, a bit more positivity, he was like, well, you know, there was a good bit of play for our goal. But apart from that, not a lot you can take from the game. It was rubbish. Didn't look like we wanted to win. Hamilton looked more of a threat than us. It was really disappointing. All credit to him. We're just so poor today. But it's such a good interview if you listen to it, because he's just deadpan. He looks absolutely miserable. Doesn't want to be there. He's obviously absolutely freezing. But he's, Rangers fans loving him even more now, just because he pretty much summed up what the fans were thinking. No rose-tinted glasses. No beating about the bush. Just, it was absolutely rubbish.
Rubbish. So, for most of the game, we were very, very poor. Worst I've seen us. a good bit of play for our goal, but apart from that, not a lot you can take for that. What do you put that down to? Don't know.
See, it was a good impression by me, wasn't it?
It was a great impression by you, Hayley. And very, very frank. I almost just wanted to sort of give him a hug and tell him that it's okay. It's not that bad. It's not that bad. Perhaps he was acting a bit. Perhaps he was playing up.
There you go.
The right disappointment. Well, there we go. Let's head into topic three on that note. Well, the drama never stops here at the Offside Rule, does it? So we're continuing our silver screen theme and taking it all the way to Hollywood, baby.
Woohoo!
Yes, this week the long-awaited takeover of Wrexham is finally completed by Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney. So, Lindsay and Hayley, if you could make a blockbuster, who are the players, managers or even football clubs that you would want to take to the movies?
Before you go to Hayley, did you notice that both of them changed their names on social media to put a W before their letters, so it's like Ryan Reynolds, for the Wrexham League.
They are seemingly loving this, aren't they? And the only thing, the only word of caution that I'm going to put out there is that it's quite hard to maintain that in the world of football. Like, have they set their stall out too much to start off with? And is it going to be difficult for them to live up? Because they've come in like gods, and they're quite happy with that, I think. So yeah, that's my word of caution. Maybe I should just not be so downbeat on it. What about other movies, players or clubs that would make great movies?
I think there are a lot of footballers who have come from very humble backgrounds, and a lot who had sort of a life before football that you maybe wouldn't expect. Angel Di Maria, I just want to mention him as a player, one of the most expensive footballers in 2014. As a child, he used to play football on the streets. He used to play barefoot as well. Scouts spotted him, and that was it. His career was made. But before that, his dad worked in a coal mine and used to take him and his sisters down the coal mine, and he genuinely worked down a coal mine as a child, because his parents basically needed them to help out. It was also a way of looking after them and not leaving them at home. So I think there are a lot of footballers who have other stories and come from places of real poverty and then managed to make it as a footballer. And before you know it, obviously earning absolutely millions. And a lot of them as well putting back into the community. So it'd be nice to see that side of them as well. There are a lot of African footballers that send money back to, you know, where they've originally grown up. A lot of them do it through the churches as well.
I've got one on that vibe, actually, Hayley, and it's one I always think of, because when we set this topic, it wasn't about achievement in football necessarily. We're talking about the Hollywood film script. So this is somebody that's got to have that life story that is going to really capture the imagination of a whole country, whole world. So I was thinking, who translates that? And Victor Moses, I think, is right up there, because he was forced to seek asylum in London as an 11-year-old. That was following the murder of both his parents in Nigeria, which was war-torn at the time. Raised in poverty, he played barefoot football, so you'd have all of that early stage of him growing up. He was then taken into a foster home in South London, so had all these foster parents that you'd have that element of the story. And then eventually was picked and selected to join Palace's academy. And of course, his Crystal Palace academy roots onwards made history, and he then became a Premier League winner with Chelsea. Mm. So I think that could round it all off. It's got the beginning, middle and end, doesn't it? It to a Hollywood film.
Talking of films, and also, you know, people coming from a troubled background, or perhaps they've been a refugee. I know that Luka Modric fits into that, actually, as well. I think he grew up in a shabby hotel in Croatia, which was obviously at war at the moment. The area where he lived was meant to be, you know, very, very violent. And he actually lacked a lot of confidence, I think, coming from that background. So it's quite amazing when you think about his story. And actually that would make a good film, if only to explain war in Eastern Europe at that time. Do you remember Goal, though? This is also a story of an immigrant or a refugee. Can't remember. But Newcastle played a part in this. So this film, I think it was 2005, follows the story of Santiago Muniz. So this actually happened.
Very famous, yeah. Mm-hmm.
For anyone that doesn't know it, yeah. So
there was a lot of money behind this.
There was a whole load of money behind it. I think it was pretty much a flop, wasn't it? And I know that Beckham was in it, Zidane was in it as well. A little fact that you might not have known is that the film apparently inspired Callum Wilson to join Newcastle. He watched it when he was 13. and he revealed that it played a part. I mean, I don't know whether this is true or not, but apparently he revealed that it played a part in his decision to join Newcastle over Aston Villa. So there you go. So that is a bit of Modric who would make a good film, and then a bit of an actual film that happened that I don't think was very successful despite the amount of money behind it.
If I was a Hollywood director, I don't know how I would do this next one, because it's George Weah, and I don't know whether you'd start with current day, and you know, he's a Liberian politician, the 25th president of the country, and then do flashbacks to his former career, spending 14 years playing in France, Italy, England. You'd have that moment as well that Arsene Wenger signed him for Monaco in 1988, and then he invites Arsene Wenger back out there when he gets elected. He was one of the few names, wasn't he, that got that sort of red carpet treatment. He's been known to be one of the best players never to win the Champions League, certainly the greatest African player of all time. So to have that as the backstory, or do you do it the other way around and you do him starting off in football and ending up in politics? I don't know. That's why I'm not a director.
Whatever happened to Jamie Vardy, the film, by the way, girls? Do you know?
Oh, it never got released. Did that get released?
I don't know.
There's meant to be one.
I don't know. I think the latest was that they were waiting for a fairy tale ending. But if winning the league isn't, unless it goes beyond winning the league. But I think that, yeah, basically it's not going to happen as far as I know. Hayley.
Right. What about a man who sadly passed away in this last week? I just want to mention him because not many people know about him. He was a true pioneer of football. He was actually the first black football manager, Tony Collins. I didn't know anything about him and broke the news on Sky Sports this week, and then learnt that he actually discovered my dad. I had no idea. Yeah, he discovered my dad. And I was actually sent a newspaper article where he'd gone up to watch my dad playing for St Mirren. He'd been working with Don Revie at Leeds, who then employed him when he was England manager as a scout to do dossiers on opposition. But he'd asked him to basically find a replacement for Jack Charlton. I didn't know any of this. And he'd gone up to Scotland and he'd actually knew my grandfather, because Tony Collins actually managed Rochdale in 1960. He won the League Cup final with them. My granddad played for Accrington Stanley in the late 50s and was somebody that people would have known because he was a well-known goalkeeper, won the Scottish Junior Cup final as well with 90,000 fans at Hampden. And he was like, oh, there's big Tommy McQueen, knew that this Gordon McQueen was playing, and he made sure that my dad basically signed for Leeds United, and the rest you say is history. That wouldn't be part of his story, but his story is wonderful. He worked for Manchester United. He worked underneath Sir Alex Ferguson. He brought in Lee Sharp and plenty of other big name players as well that he discovered. He was basically a scout. He did play football at a fairly decent level. He played for Sheffield Wednesday, York, Watford, Norwich, ended up at Rochdale, who he then went back and managed. But he was a really, really successful and well-known coach.
I like that.
So I just think first black manager, I think that is something, you know, hugely topical at the moment. I think we all know Keith Alexander, who became Lincoln City manager in 1993. He was often described as a first black manager. But Tony Collins actually was the very first, and it'd be interesting to find out. His daughter actually helped him release a book about his life, so I'm going to buy it. There was a football publication basically called Football Master Spine. It was a biography co-authored by his daughter.
Very good indeed. This topic, of course, lends itself to Balotelli, the movie. Why Always Me? Is what that would be subtitled as.
Will it feature fireworks?
It'll feature fireworks. It'll feature
dressing up as Santa,
going to a school and giving lots of presents. I think he even filmed his own goal celebration for Marseille a few years back. So perhaps he was working on the footage. Who knows? Perhaps it is to come. Lindsay.
And one of the stories that should be pursued, another rags to riches tale, I'm afraid, but Nadia Nadim, who is in the women's game, an Afghan refugee who ended up getting asylum in Denmark, then got scouted while she was there playing football, ended up at Manchester City for a while, now at PSG. Also, she probably has qualified by now. I know she was qualifying to be a reconstructive surgeon.
Yes,
very, very intelligent.
I actually actually spoke to her just before Christmas for an interview, and she was studying hard, but just what she had to put up with. I mean, her father basically went missing, presumed dead. They didn't sort of find out about the official circumstances of his death, but the mother took the family. I mean, it was, you know, it's a properly harrowing story about how they escaped. And at one point it was suggested that her mum might marry her dad's brother, her uncle, to try and make matters easier for her. But I mean, it's too much to go into here, but it's a really fascinating story. And she's so grounded about it as well, Linz. I mean, she must have told it a fair few times, but she's so grounded about it, considering the death and murder and terror that, you know, surrounded her as a young kid. Terrible.
The best version that I've heard it told, because I know she's had to tell it quite a few times over the years, but Colin Murray did an At Home With.
Yeah.
So if you like listening to podcasts, he has got one
that you could
listen to the whole story.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. So from potential stars of the silver screen to the stars that haven't been discovered yet, potentially, let's go to Any Other Business. Now, this section of the show, of course, some of the stories that might have gone under the radar a bit this week. I can't say mine massively fall into that category. Mine sort of fall into the interesting / bizarre territory. Hayley, I know you've got a good one to get us started with, though.
Yes, I've got to. And this one, it's my kind of story. It's a footballer in Brazil who has been given an 8-game ban. Okay, why?
What for?
Well, he sparked a riot after scoring a goal late on. But it was he was banned for his goal celebration. Why was it so bad? Well, because he stripped down completely naked and started jiggling his bits to the opposition. That's right.
Yes.
He ripped off his top.
Yes.
Pulled down his shorts. So there are images of this, but luckily just from behind. He scored the winner against Marisa, have no idea how to say it, apologies. And, sent his side into the Carioca Championship. No idea if I've said that right either. I do work for Sky Sports News as a presenter. I promise you I do. But absolutely hopeless when it comes
Brazilian's
to Brazil's
tough,
side,
though, isn't it?
A little bit lower down the side. Yeah, so it's a Portuguese Carioca. So he was given an 8-game ban. There was a massive brawl at the end of the match as well. He just got a bit carried away. But he'd said that they'd called him a slob, an alcoholic. And also, there could have been sort of some racially aggravated shoutings as well. He'd said that they'd called him a fat monkey, which is absolutely disgraceful. So he was really annoyed about that and just thought, well, his way of just showing them what he thought was, I'll just rip my clothes off and I'll just jiggle my genitals at you. So there you have it.
It's actually called a willycopter, by the way. Someone tweeted me with that. Yeah,
oh, wow.
A willycopter, which perhaps describes the action.
Okay, well, the reason this came to my attention, it actually happened on December the 9th, which was my birthday, and it's only just now that it was sort of, the case has come up and he's been banned, so there you go.
One from me then. Assistant referee Darren Cann was on Pointless this week, if you missed that. Not Pointless for him, though, he won, and then that was broadcast on the TV. And then that night, of course, it wasn't filmed on the same day, but just coincidence, really, that night he then ran the line for Leicester versus Brighton. What a multitasker, eh?
You said he won, but not very much. That's my problem with Pointless. I love it as a game show idea, but the prize, oh my word, sometimes you get a few hundred pounds if
was
that,
it?
Isn't it?
Well, on my little report here, it's got winning the jackpot, so I presume that that's over-egging it somewhat.
Very much so, yeah. I tell you what was under-egged was in the WSL. I cannot believe that this happened. There was a Birmingham derby due to go ahead between Aston Villa and Birmingham City in Women's Super League. And they called off the game with how long to go, do you think? 5 minutes to go.
That's ridiculous.
It's
absolutely ridiculous.
Why was that? Has there been an official reason given, Linz, so far?
They haven't said any further, that they tried to get the game to go ahead. They had looked at alternative venues before. I don't think, Kate, they can possibly have an excuse for doing it with 5 minutes to go. There were journalists that had travelled there. They had to travel home again, actually covered the match. The players, getting
the money
in the mental
headspace. Getting there as well. Yeah, ridiculous. Hayley, give us another one then.
Okay, just finally, Derek Carmo, who actually suffered a really horrible, horrible injury in a game between Porto and Braga, had to be not just stretched off the pitch, but an ambulance was brought onto the pitch to help him and take him away. The ambulance broke down. They couldn't get it started, but which is not funny. He's obviously in the ambulance and needing medical attention. However, both sets of players came together and pushed the ambulance and managed to get it going again. You can just see them all in their blue and white stripy shirts and their red, all coming together,
nice
pushing
story.
The ambulance off the pitch, obviously because they needed to continue playing the game as well, but wanted to make sure that he was then taken to safety. So there you go. He was actually a target of for Manchester United and Liverpool. So we wish him well in his recovery. It was a real horror injury. But the scenes of these players, it's quite funny. You're just looking at a sports TV who tweeted this story with the sort of the Braga nil, Porto one in the 70th minute. And you just see a close up of what you think is going to be some action on the pitch. And you just see an ambulance just popping into view and the players sort of pushing it and running towards the halfway line. It's quite comedic, despite the fact that obviously it is quite serious as well, because the player was really badly injured.
Yeah, but I think you can laugh retrospectively once everything's okay. It's fine,
team
isn't
effort.
It? That
team
that
effort.
Image will be something that I'm sure that he'll laugh at too.
Well, that calls time on the show for this week. Thank you both of you. And thank you for listening as well, folks. Hayley, tell everyone how they can get in touch with us on the socials.
Give us a follow on @OffsideRulePod on Instagram and Twitter.
And the website too, OffsideRulePodcast.com. Loads of great content for you to keep across there. Pretty much something new every day. Lindsay, where are you this weekend?
I'm at Crystal Palace against Burnley this weekend, and I'm also doing some filming on Sunday at the Amex in Brighton because they've opened up the stadium to trained St John's Ambulance to give vaccinations.
I think I knew that was going to happen. Yeah, fantastic. What a wonderful thing to be a part of. I should grab you on my radio show for afterwards, shouldn't I? Get you to tell the tale. Right, well, thank you to everyone for listening. Have a great weekend, Hayley. Have a great weekend, Lindsay. Until next time, bye.
You've been listening to The Offside Rule, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything offside at offsiderulepodcast.com and by following @OffsideRulePod on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of The Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Offside Rule is a Muddy Knees Media production.
The Athletic.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.